In 1982, author Stephen King delivered to the literary canon a coming-of-age novella that was titled The Body. It was set in the fictional town of Castle Rock, and the filming rights were immediately optioned, and director Rob Reiner would pick up the mantle and put the story to film. Not only would the film resonate with generations of young men trying to find their way in an unbalanced world, it would also give a sort of infrastructural fame to what is perhaps the world's most famous train trestle. We'll talk about that as well as the most frequented of film sites from the iconic masterpiece of angst and adolescent upward mobility, the film Stand By Me on box number 7. In what is perhaps a classic and possibly the most iconic scene, actors Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, and Jerry O'Connell are seen attempting to circumvent a longer foot trip along a body of water by crossing a train trestle. As they nervously skirt across the rails and ties, the inevitable happens. A train. An ominous train manages to catch them as they are about one-third across the lake arm, forcing them to run. Two of them make it, and two are seen forced to jump, only to be found hyperventilating in the rocky embankment below. This 80-foot-tall trestle stands to this day as part of the McLeod River Railroad and extends over the McLeod arm of Lake Britton near MacArthur Birdie Falls Memorial State Park in California. What is essentially a 4-minute scene took an entire week to film, and while the ultimate title of the film is Stand By Me, its initial title was, of course, something that went back to the book called The Body, based on a MacGuffin in the film that I will explain in a moment. Friends of mine who were bystanders in 1985 during the filming remember the crew shirts with the original title of The Body being on them and were apparently handed out from Rob Reiner to everyone on the crew. The scene where the boys took their leap is on essentially the northeast end down in a rocky embankment, and apparently 4 female stunt doubles were rung in for the more intense work and had their hair cropped to resemble the 4 bridge-running protagonists themselves. Plywood planks were placed to avoid the feet going through the gaps, and while the train seems to barely miss the boys, we are assured that something called telephoto compression was used to make the train appear closer than it was. And by the way, it was locomotive MCRR-25, which apparently is still in commission on the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad. Be cool to find that particular engine and catch a bit of a trip. One interesting bit of trivia, the boys did not initially register an organic sense of fear until Rob Reiner entered the Grand Guignol mode and threatened the boys outright. Quote, "You see those guys? They don't want to push that dolly down the track anymore. And the reason they're getting tired is because of you. I told them that if they weren't worried about that train was going to kill them, they should worry that I was going to. And that's when they ran." But so what is it about the story? What is it that drove the wind into the sails of a narrative that galvanized a train trestle into the collective consciousness of mankind? Well, as it turns out, it would be the film's relatability. Each of the boys states that their roles were a direct reflection of their home lives, and after Rob Reiner put them together for an extended period of time prior to filming, they all proclaimed that their camaraderie was real. And I'll come back to that at the end. So what about the film itself? Well, if one was to summarize in the shortest possible form, one would say, One would describe the film for TV Guide as four adolescent buddies find out there's a dead body in their town and go through a life-changing crucible just to locate it. And that, my friends, is the recipe for a good story. What 12-year-old boy is going to demur from trying to see a dead body? Especially if their treehouse buddies are in on the caper. Especially if one has accurate and clandestine intelligence as to its whereabouts. You see, I spent my formative years playing in the woods, pretending to be a caveman from a television show, Korg, 70,000 BC, which ran on Saturday mornings during my childhood in the late 1970s. We darted around the woods of an area called Happy Valley with cut-off shorts, speaking in abbreviated caveman lingo, and fashioning spears out of bamboo stalks that we found in the little ponds down in the canyon. When we got a cut on our skin, one of us, our leader, his name was Rusty, convinced the others that a manzanita leaf was something that carried a ton of medicinal value, and we would pull one off and tie it across the cut. Weirdly enough, to be fair, maybe it actually does, and we didn't even realize it. In later years, sneaking around a cemetery at night looking for ghosts was a thing. But no matter what it was, from riding bikes to skipping rocks to fishing 74 bluegill out of one doomed summertime pond and moving them to another doomed summertime pond, it all came down to a camaraderie that cannot be quantified in terms of human value. That was my childhood. It's priceless. Then one day the clock ticks 1 minute past the time you will ever meet at the street corner again on those bikes with your buddies. And life takes on an empty complexity that cries out for the old days, and it really never stops. So that's why the movie's relatable. Every now and then, I'll take a drive through my old stomping grounds, my old school. I'll stand at the perimeter, and I'll see the ghosts of the past playing, pretending we're Star Wars characters, playing dodgeball, playing three flies up, getting swats from Mr. Pizzello in the office. That's a story I'll tell another day. And then those memories fade. So in 1993... guitarist Joe Perry from the band Aerosmith was filmed on that same Stand By Me train trestle for the guitar solo for the song Living on the Edge. And it seems to me to have been an overt act, as the song itself cries out for a time in the past, and perhaps Joe's deliberate placement on that iconic train track with a McLeod River train blowing past hails these words from the song. There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way, and God knows it ain't His. In fact, The Goonies, Stand By Me, The Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, and even Stranger Things all call into play a desire for unity and friendship, which reminds me, I said I would come back to the camaraderie between the cast members of Stand By Me. A few years ago, when Corey Feldman was every day active on his social media, he still is, and I don't need to go into the enigma that is Corey Feldman. But I was following him on a daily basis, and it was somewhat entertaining, and he, as I said, is an enigmatic character with a lot of odd subtlety in the very non-subtle delivery of his life. But he was responding to comments, and I just happened to have on my schedule a time where I was headed out to that train trestle as part and parcel of a larger obligation. And I wrote, "I'm headed out to the train trestle today. Any requests?" He said, "Yes. Leave a rose for River, if you would." And I did. And I took a picture. And I sent it to him, but I don't know if he ever saw it. Maybe this show helps with that. And that's it. It's an odd show. I don't know what I'm supposed to do about that, but just do another show. And maybe it's not quite so odd. I don't know. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. I'll be back probably midweek with some thoughts and an interesting sort of follow-up to my so far failed letter writing campaign and my attempts to procure guests to come on the show. As it stands right now, I don't know what the percentile is, but I've had one guest on the show, and I've put out numerous requests, and those have been an abject failure up to this point. And so I'm going to be covering box number 7's ultimate failure theater. We'll see you next time. This is box number 7.